welcome to Ukraine Calling, a look at what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on the main issue. I'm Marta Dychok for Hromadske Radio with a new episode to start the new year.
I told many people, be careful because you don't want to see yourself on television. Cameras all over the place. And again, not just Russia, all over. Does anyone really believe that story?
Добрий день, уважаемые коллеги. Поздравляю вас с началом рабочего года 2017-го. И предлагаю поговорить по нескольким вопросам в начале нашей встречи, а именно о том, как проходили мероприятия, связанные с прохождением максимума.
In Donbass, over the past 3 weeks, however, it seems those men in uniform calling the shots and those men in uniform firing the shots were truly unaware of Christmas. On Orthodox Christmas Day, on 7th of January, our monitors recorded ceasefire violations in all known hotspots.
Chrystia Freeland, Minister of Foreign Affairs. L'honorable Chrystia Freeland, Ministre des Affaires étrangères.
There is a Ukrainian dimension in the bombshell that BuzzFeed News dropped on January the 10th when they published a report by an unnamed former British intelligence officer about President-elect Trump's compromising relationship with the Kremlin. On pages 21-22, there's a section called Russia-Ukraine, the demise of Trump's campaign manager Paul Manafort. This part of the report states that the Ukrainian ex-president Viktor Yanukovych held a secret meeting with Russia's President Putin near Volgograd in Russia on the 15th of August 2016. Yanukovych is said to have confided in Putin that he made kickback payments to Manafort, but assured the Russian leader that he covered his tracks. Putin was reportedly skeptical and worried that these illegal payments would be traced back to Trump's campaign manager. We'll post a link to the report on our website. While the Kremlin was dismissing U.S. intelligence reports about Russian interference in the U.S. presidential election as a witch hunt, German intelligence released a statement. They accused Russia of cyber attacks against the OSCE monitors in Ukraine, as well as against the German parliament in 2015. Later in the show, we'll have a feature interview about information and cyber warfare with one of Ukraine's top experts on the subject, Yevhen Fedchenko. He's the head of the journalism school at the University of the Kyiv-Mohyla Academy and leader of the Stop Fake Project. One of Ukraine's richest and most powerful men, Viktor Pinchuk, caused a storm at the end of last year. He published an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal on December the 29th in which he suggested that Ukraine should trade Crimea for peace in the Donbas. Pinchuk is son-in-law to former President Leonid Kuchma. Kuchma is Ukraine's representative on the Minsk Trilateral Contact Group on Ukraine, which is trying to hammer out a peace settlement. Pinchuk's suggestion was widely criticized within and outside of Ukraine. Deputy head of Ukraine's presidential administration, Konstantin Yeliseyev, published a strong rebuke in the Wall Street Journal on January the 4th. He said that compromises on Russia's terms are the wrong policy for peace in Ukraine. British Chatham House scholar James Scher had the same sentiment in a long analytical piece. He titled it, "Preemptive Compromise Would Imperil Ukraine." We'll be featuring an interview with Mr. Scher later in the season, so watch for that. And in the meantime, we'll post links to all the articles on our webpage. It appears that Ukraine's fugitive ex-president Viktor Yanukovych has started blogging and tweeting. His first blog appeared on December the 29th in a well-known Ukrainian news site called Korrespondent. That's the same day that Viktor Pinchuk's article appeared in the Wall Street Journal. According to a report in the Kyiv Post, Korrespondent's editor Maxim Minin said that blogs can be uploaded in their publication without the editor's permission. There's been some speculation whether the log is real or fake. Start out again. There has been some speculation whether the blog was real or fake. Respected Ukrainian media analyst Diana Dutsik from Detector Media told the Kyiv Post that it seems real, that it looks like part of Russia's campaign to increase its messages in Ukraine's media space. Those of you who read Russian can check it out for yourself by following the link on our website. There was a sharp escalation in hostilities in Ukraine's war zone over the past 2 weeks. OSCE monitors in Ukraine registered a 250% increase in ceasefire violations over the two-week holiday period. That's the end of December and the beginning of January. they urged that more entry-exit checkpoints be set up. Spokesman Alexander Hook said there's an increase in heavy weapons banned by the Minsk agreements. He said that on January the 7th, the day that many Ukrainians were celebrating Christmas, there were explosions in all the what they call traditional flashpoints. Over the past 2 weeks, 3 Ukrainian soldiers were killed and 38 were wounded, although on Ukrainian Christmas Day there were no casualties or injuries. Canada's new foreign affairs minister is Canadian-Ukrainian Chrystia Freeland. She was sworn into her new position on Tuesday, January the 10th, after a cabinet shuffle on Ottawa's Parliament Hill. Many are calling this a bold move by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, since Ms. Freeland, Canada's new face to the world, is banned from entry to Russia. She was among those blacklisted by Russia in 2014, when Canada imposed sanctions after Russia annexed Crimea. The 48-year-old Ms. Freeland has degrees from Harvard and Oxford universities. She's worked as a journalist in Ukraine, Russia, Britain, Canada, and the U.S., and is an award-winning author. In 2013, she embarked on a political career and quickly rose up the ranks of Canada's Liberal Party. When the Liberals won the federal election in 2015, Trudeau appointed Freeland Minister of International Finance. In that capacity, she skillfully negotiated the free trade agreement with the EU, Ukraine, and others. She visited Kyiv with Prime Minister Trudeau last summer and gave an interview to Hromadske Radio's Ukraine calling. After Freeland was appointed foreign minister, Russia offered to lift the travel ban on her if Canada lifted its sanctions. Freeland firmly rejected the offer, saying, "There is no quid pro quo for aggression and illegal action on their part." Yevhen Vadchenko is the head of the journalism school at one of Ukraine's top universities, the University of the Kyiv-Mohyla Academy, and he has set up and runs a project called Stop Fake, which is in response to the information war that Ukraine has been experiencing for a number of years. Mr. Vadchenko, thank you very much for joining us.
Yes, thanks for inviting.
Fake news, information wars, state-sponsored cyber attacks, foreign interference in elections, none of this is new, but it is new for Americans. They're just learning what it's like to be on the receiving end of that kind of activity. And over the last few weeks, the United States has just been buzzing about this Russian interference in their recent elections. Ukraine has been experiencing this for a number of years. Usually Americans go to Ukraine and offer advice on things like how to build democracy, how to build economy, how to build a free press. Perhaps now, what can the United States learn from Ukraine, given that Ukraine's had this experience of being on the receiving end of this type of activity?
Actually, Ukraine is living with this for the last 2.5 years. I mean, it's a very active stage, but also we previously experienced a lot of propaganda through television, which was around for years and years since actually Ukraine independence. And before that, we had a huge experience of Soviet propaganda. So we really are pretty much immersed in this environment, and we are learning how to cope with this and trying to make sure that we differentiate journalism and something which is definitely not a journalism, but just pretend to be a journalism or masquerade to be a journalism, and make sure that our audiences also would understand this difference and would also be looking for more truth around. And we are working now as a Stop Fake project to increase the awareness of people of the dangers of propaganda, but also we widely talk to many other audiences beyond Ukraine to explain how fake news are ruining journalism, how they influence public policy, decision making in different countries, elections. And now we have a big data set of all those fakes we debunked during last 2.5 years. And actually, we have more than 1,000. And what we can say from that this is very kind of systematic approach to creating the atmosphere of untruths, of lies, and evidently it's not just evidences of bad journalism or low quality journalism. These are evidences of very well created system, which is created evidently by the government, Russian government, and is run top down and is very, very well resourced with money, with people. And it actually has a huge impact. And now we see how it works from one country to another. And actually, Ukraine was one just the test and laboratory for all this. And now we see how all those tools out of this toolbox are used in many other countries, including the United States.
In this type of warfare, this kind of information warfare, one of the aims is to create confusion, to cause doubt, to get people to not really believe in anything because so many different narratives are put out there. Can you give us some examples of how you have actually tried to wade through this cloud of confusion and mixed information and sort out the fakes from the truth? I mean, how can you know what's really the truth, and how can that help others to learn?
Yeah, actually, this is a great question, because as we talk about the era of post-truth, the atmosphere around is that truth is almost non-existent anymore. But that's not true, because still we can find a lot of high-quality journalism, but alongside, we also see a lot of fakes, and definitely to find them, we do a lot of monitoring. So we have the list of Russian media outlets or so-called media outlets, which we monitor on a daily basis. And also we had a set of markers which allows us to differentiate real news from fake news.
Can you tell us what those markers are? Sorry to interrupt. What are those markers?
They're pretty much simple, and any journalist can give you those examples. The problem is that journalists are not using them that much anymore. So first of all, we are looking at the titles of the stories, because very often the title and the story itself tells completely different stories. And as soon as people are mostly reading news stories from social media, the title or 140 figures is the only thing most people would consume, would share with others. So it's really important to see what's inside the story. And unfortunately, that's what most people are not doing. The second stage, we are checking the sources, because as we talk about Russian propaganda, we see that they are quoting just each other very often. They are quoting a lot of anonymous sources. They are quoting unnamed foreign media, or just generalizing American media, European media, Western media. And then when we start to look from where the story originated, we just find the long-standing blog, which might be created 2 days before the publication of this article, or just some information from a social media from pretty much anonymous account, and other scenes. And very often they just cross-quote each other, and you just cannot find from where the story originated. Also, we check the quotes they are using, because very often if they do translation, they change the meaning of the wording of all that, with a purpose, of course. And we had many stories like this, for example, stories on West dropping sanctions. So they try to find this information, every piece of news they are trying to fake. And when we start to check this information, to fact check this information, we find that those sources or those speakers they've been quoting, they are talking completely different things. For example, we had a great story coming from one of Russian media outlets saying that U.S. ambassador in Moscow said that they are considering dropping sanctions. And then when I contacted U.S. embassy in Moscow, they said no. He said just the opposite. We are looking into continuing sanctions, actually. So that the meaning of what was said was completely different. So we are looking just for these very small scenes, but they are really important, because they completely change the whole meaning, not only of a long-standing use, but the whole narrative, because they produce it on a mass scale and then they translate them into many, many different languages. For example, only Sputnik now has more than 40 languages. So by the end of the day, they take one fake which was produced in Russian or English, and then it's translated into all those many languages. And that's, it's everywhere on Google search, and many media just republish it because they still consider RT or Sputnik to be the traditional media, not the arm of the government in the conducting of information warfare. So we just want to set the record straight, and we collect all those stories as archive, which is available on our website, to show the scale and the system behind. And also the data collected by us allows us to make analysis of all that fake stories. So we identified 18 main frames of Russian propaganda, for example, on Ukraine. And all of them are very, very famous already. So, for example, this is a narrative of Ukraine as a fascist state, or Ukraine as a failed state, of junta who came to power as a part of the coup d'etat here in Ukraine. And they just try to find every week, or sometimes every day, some supportive facts for all those frames, to make sure that they repeat it all the time and keep them alive.
It sounds like it's a lot of work to fight this sort of an information war and expose all the fakes. The question I wanted to get your thoughts on is, journalists in the United States in established liberal democracies, they're now facing this sort of information war coming at them. What sort of challenges this new kind of warfare pose to established journalism, where the norms are that one has to report all sides of the story? So you need to report even news that apparently is fake. So how is that changing the whole face of journalism?
Yeah, I think that we are now witnessing the huge changes in journalism, and all previously existing rules and norms seems to move away very fast, and it escalates very quickly, so which makes the work of journalists sometimes very difficult and sometimes even pointless, because now to distribute fakes or manufacture fakes, you even don't need journalists. You can just go to social media and you would get even bigger audience than any traditional media outlet. So for journalists now, the biggest challenge is how to recreate the system, how to introduce the kind of new rules for our work. And it's really very difficult because we exist in the environment where there is no any rules. And if only journalists would stick to the rules and all other audiences or other newsmakers would just do whatever they wish, our rules and our norms wouldn't do any good, because then journalism would look very marginal and pointless, because we would be steps behind all the time and we would be just explaining what went wrong instead of be more proactive, and which is really, really a big challenge right now. And the point where journalists were looking kind of for all sides seems for me also very outdated, because now you very often even cannot define whose sides are in any particular situation, because you have so many actors and each of them is playing kind of their own game and by their own rules, that it's impossible to define who the sides are. Or very often we see the competition between facts on the one side and opinion on the other. That's what RT and Sputnik are kind of pretending to do. They're saying that we're giving you the other side of the story, but they're not using any facts. They're just giving their own opinion, and it's very difficult to compete with them, because they do that in a very irrational way, emotional way, without providing any facts and just being loud And that's find a huge audience for them. All conspiracy theorists are with them, all those people who actually do not need any facts, because again, all the years of the existence of propaganda created the atmosphere where people are not interested in facts, because they've been told many, many times that facts are irrelevant, the truth does not exist anyway. Everybody is lying, so what's the point in looking for reliable sources, or what's the point of reading the reliable media, consuming reliable media? You can just, you know, listen to the loudest voices around, and it's very misleading and very, very confusing. And I'm sure that it would have very very long-lasting effect on the audiences.
We see a lot of these trends now moving to the United States. You have been working on this issue for a number of years. What implications do you see of this type of behavior in arguably the most powerful country in the world? And what advice would you give to your fellow journalists in the United States?
Well, I think journalists should basically bring their profession back and start to do what journalists were always expected to do, just checking facts and be very kind of pushing those facts to the audiences, even when the audiences are reluctant at some points to hear that, and kind of regain the profession back. But on the other side, we really need to reinvent journalism, because the old rules, as I mentioned, are dying, and it's not problem of journalism only, because we do not exist in the vacuum. So, for example, Ukrainian lesson with the war in Crimea and war in Donbass were very painful, because journalists were not quick enough to adjust to arising issues and arising challenges, and we've been losing this. For example, when occupation of Crimea started, journalists spent quite a lot of time trying to find who are those polite green men who are occupying Crimea. And they were really sincerely looking for the other side of the story and waiting for sound bites. But it took a lot of time and the momentum was lost. And that basically created the good atmosphere to move and start the war in Donbass. So that really was a situation when kind of slow journalism or old-style journalism played very kind of wrong role, because journalists were expected to get the second opinion of what's going on, the facts from the other side, and the other side was just creating fait accompli on the ground and was not caring much about what journalists would be doing in this situation. And then they said, okay, we would produce facts on the ground, and then we would explain everything to you. You would see it by yourselves, you know. So that definitely means that the old style journalism is kind of a little bit outlived, and we need to reinvent it and to be more quick, and probably to be more cynical, because policymakers and politicians are really using these weaknesses of the journalism sometimes, and that's the moments when journalism is losing, it seems to me.
Well, thank you very much for your insight. As the United States prepares for a new president, journalists have a huge task ahead of them to sort through the facts and the spin, and hopefully they might get some insight from what's been happening in Ukraine. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for inviting.
With all the tension in the headlines, I've selected a song this week that will help you relaxed, at least for a little while. It's by a cave band called Druhe Sonce, the Second Sun, and it's called Sti in Ukrainian. The lyrics and music were written by the lead singer, Marina Yurevich, and Andriy Kulikov, Hromadsky Radio's CEO, translated the song into English. He premiered it this week on his weekly music show. In English, it's called Wait. Thank you. Next Friday, Donald Trump will be inaugurated the 45th President of the United States. Ukraine Calling will bring you a feature interview about how this will affect Ukraine with Professor Daniel Dresner. He's an American professor of international politics at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. He not only writes books, op-ed pieces, blogs, and appears as a regular media commentator, Dresner has lived in Donetsk and met Vladimir Putin. We're also starting a mailing list for Ukraine Calling listeners. If you'd like to receive our weekly podcast in your mailbox, or if you have any comments or suggestions, please write to us. Our address is ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. That's Ukraine Calling, all one word, at hromadskeradio, all one word, .org. I'm Marta Dechok for Hromadske Radio. Thanks for listening.